Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, Phil.
Hey, the gathering of the Betterites. All right, listen, before we get into what I want to get into, I think it was Darby posted something on the board about this idea of value and worth and said something like, I always thought my value was what people are willing to pay me. How do we figure out our value? And I came up with this number of $125, which I mentioned. And everybody sort of attached to that, and it freaked some people out, you know, and other people embraced it. So I want to talk about that. So who other than me can start this discussion, either by reiterating the question or maybe starting with some kind of perspective that might begin a process of an answer?
Okay, so when you say value, what are we talking about?
Well, I asked the question, you know, what is your value? What are you going to charge? And my intention was to compel everybody to charge in line with their value. So what is common in this field is if you ask a personal trainer, what is a session with you worth? In the abstract, they'll say $100 a session. But when we look at what they actually charge, sometimes it's $35 because they'll sell a 10-pack for $350. Mm-hmm. So somehow there's an extreme mismatch. So I think we have to start by asking the question, what is your value? What is a session with you worth?
It depends if there's extra counseling involved.
Why?
Because you either get the person that's the athlete that wants to come here and train, or the person wants to talk about their problems that really needs counseling.
So you're saying that we offer more value to the person who needs counseling?
I'd say we should charge more because it's harder. I definitely feel that we're worth more.
I know. Are you worth more? Let's think about it. Are you worth, and I'm glad you're bringing this up, are you worth more to listen to somebody whine than to help an athlete move up a notch?
No. Both.
So where is the greater, where is the greater value?
Well, I think it's two different customers.
Let's talk about the customer who whines. Give me an example. What might they be complaining about that you're listening to?
Well, they seem to come back to you in seasons of their life when it's not so good.
And what?
They're pretty much there for the season. And, you know, they come and go, but 20 years later, they're still coming and going. You know, and it's always a high and a low, but working on their mental side of things, there is a huge value for you in their life, and they recognize that. Then there's the athlete that's a lot more consistent that definitely sees and doesn't need you for the other. But I definitely think that, you know, people do need to realize that, you know, if they did go to a counselor, they would have to pay X amount of money and get training on top of counseling. It's definitely, I think people have to really go through it to really understand the value in it. I mean, I understand it's presented one way or another, but the ones that have truly been around a long time, I mean, they just know what value it's put in their life and where they need it.
Okay, but you're creating a lot of generalizations. So give me an example of somebody who would come to you with all of this whining and tell me what they might say. Give me an example of what you're listening to.
I might not necessarily mean whining all the time. It's just, you know, we all experience suffering what we're going through, but it's life, and I think people need more of that solid foundation with, you know, an understanding the value of just not counting your reps for you, but there's a lot more to it, especially the ones that have a lot more experience in it.
I grasp that. I hear what you're saying. I don't think you're hearing my question, though. Give me a specific example of what the dialogue might be. Understanding this wouldn't be representative of everybody, but just give me a specific example.
Sure. I'll just go back to my day-to-day. People, I guess I would say in the in-between times, out of a relationship, lost a child, low self-esteem.
Okay. So to me,
anxiety of being in a bigger environment with more people.
To me, okay, and this is my opinion, you are describing the responsibility of a social worker, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist if, in fact, we're looking at a dollar exchange. Now, if we're just looking at a friendly ear, then that's a whole different story. But if you're going to respect what you do as a profession, then it is up to you to determine what is the promise you make. Stay with me. An auto mechanic promises to fix your car. An accountant promises to get your taxes done in a way that is to your benefit. Where is that noise coming from? Is somebody being arrested now? Okay. I'd like to try to keep the lines open, but if there is noise in the background, I'll mute everybody. A receptionist is supposed to greet people and make them feel welcome. A waitress or a server is supposed to bring you the meal that you order, right? So there are specific promises in line with what we choose to do as an avocation, right?
Right.
Okay, now, if I decide to ask my waitress to give me just a shoulder massage, she's not obligated to do that. She's welcome to say it's not what I do. Now, if she chooses to, because she might get a better tip, great. But it's not changing her promise. Her promise is to serve me the food that I order. You follow me?
Yes.
So if we are going to take responsibility, take ownership of our income, take ownership of what we choose to do, then we have to choose the promise we make. So that's where it starts. What is the promise that we make? And I have never pursued my career making the promise that I will listen to all of your difficulties. I have never said my job is to sit and listen to you. Now, with that said, if my job, if my promise is to get you into the condition you would like to be in, and at some point in the process you're talking to me, I'll welcome that, but it's not my job. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Okay. So my belief is the value of my profession, with me specifically, is in whether or not I deliver on my promise. So if somebody decides that they want to come to me because they're going to walk on a treadmill at 2 miles an hour and complain and tell me all their problems, even if the problems are real, then the fact is, unless I get them into the condition they want to be in, I don't see value in that. They could do this with a friend of theirs. On the other hand, if I have a client who never says a word to me, but their goal is to lose 35 pounds, and they lose 35 pounds, I've delivered on my promise. So when I'm looking at this concept of value, I'm not looking at all of the things that I wind up doing in a day. I'm really looking at what is the career I'm choosing? What is the promise that I'm choosing to make? And if my promise is weight loss, if I'm promising, and I'm just picking one example, promise might be bodybuilding, I'll help you win a contest. But whatever the promise is, my promise is weight loss. Then what I have to look at to determine my value is how much cost is involved in this person's life. What is it costing them to be overweight? If my promise is to help somebody reverse chronic disease, I'll look at what is the cost. So here's what I see. Here's the complete mismatch that I've seen through the better part of my career. I see people going to doctors paying ridiculous amounts of money. I see them getting on medications paying ridiculous amounts of money. And we can go, no, insurance covers it. But then they're paying ridiculous amounts of money for their insurance. And the cost is more than money. The cost is the loss of hope, the reliance on a medication, the loss of energy, the change in their sense of well-being. All of these things have a cost. So now, if I have the ability to restore those things in a person, then what is my value based on the cost that I will alleviate? Do you understand?
Yes.
At least my perspective?
Yes.
Okay. So now when I look at the field of trainers, here's what I see. I see most trainers with no promise. They go, oh, I'll just take people through workouts. Yeah, you know, I'll listen to you if you have problems. And that's fine. And maybe the value there is $35. But if they think they're worth more to listen, personally, I don't think that's representative of our field. I think what you're saying is, I'm going to have more pain, right? I'm going to have more cost. I have to listen to all this stuff, so you have to pay me more. But in terms of taking ownership and saying, what am I actually charging you for? I want to be able to charge you for an outcome, and I want there to be a value associated with that outcome. So when I look at the field of trainers and I find that the average is somewhere around $35 a session, when I look at what trainers tell me the market will bear and it hovers somewhere between $75 and $110, and I look at the absence of promises, I look at most personal trainers failing to truly deliver the outcome people want, I find that to be mediocrity. So if we are going to be greater than the medium, if we're going to be above the mediocre, then I believe we have to, A, make a grander promise, B, deliver on that promise, but C, have a fair value exchange. So where did I get the number $125? Because I have trainers charging that in every part of the country and getting it. But these are not trainers who just take people through workouts. These are trainers who follow the principles that I'm sharing with you, the principles that really make them stand above, the principles that attach them to people in such a way that the people can rely upon them for an outcome. So it's important that we stop making ourselves victims of what other people do to us, and we stand in it and establish our value in terms of what we promise and what we deliver. I'm open to any thoughts, criticism, comments, agreements, anything you guys have. I'm wide open.
Hey, Phil, it's Nathan.
Hey, Nathan. What do you think?
Hey. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if you have your ideal client and you're going after and pursuing a certain kind of person, then, you know, you shouldn't allow the whiners to dictate, you know, your schedule or habits.
And in all fairness, Nathan, I said whiners. So I'm the one who said that. He was just saying if you have to listen to people, you know, listen to their problems.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that too, though. I mean, after a while, you have to be able to put your foot down and tell people this is what we're going to do. I don't want to. I mean, I don't do that. I owned a women's gym for 10 years, and you know, you get a bunch of women together in a boot camp class, and there's going to be, and even, you know, coaching athletes in women's teams, there's going to be those times when things are not, and you're like, hey, this is not the place or the time for that. We've got to get back to work, and you have to be able to shut that down. But once you start talking about it or you reciprocate back, you open up that door, and then it's just a slippery slope from that point on. But also, if you're, you know, not, if you've written down your ideal client and who you want to have as your ideal client, then you just have to put, I mean, in your words, you know, no whiners.
Yeah, and by the way, and this is also kind of an interesting perspective, and Nathan, you're already there, but people, trainers, pray for their ideal client to show up. You know, they go, oh, I really hope I get somebody who's motivated. You know, I really hope I get somebody who's in the right age group. I really hope I can get somebody who can afford it. And what they don't realize is you can choose that. And this is
right.
A part of when I talk about mindset is you've got to create that intention. And when I say that, this is not just like yogi sort of guru stuff where you create the intention, it magically happens. When you create the intention, you hunt differently. You notice things differently. You speak to people differently, and your ideal client starts showing up. And this is the power that I want you guys to take. This is the power that I want you guys to realize that you have, because your industry never taught you this. Your industry took the fact that you have a good heart and you're an altruist and you care about people and put you in a position where they never trained you to defend yourself against people taking advantage of you. In fact, nobody ever pointed it out that clients who are underpaying you are taking advantage of you. Clients who are keeping you beyond the time that they paid for are taking advantage of you. Clients who ask you to train at hours that you don't want to train and you say yes, they're taking advantage of you. Mm-hmm. So this is not getting mean. This is standing in your profession, knowing who you are, establishing and recognizing your value. And what Darby said in that post is she just thought that people will pay her what she's worth, but there's a very important prerequisite. You've got to ask them for it. So when I find trainers who never were able to get over that $100 session mark, here's what I know. They never asked for it. They never asked for it. And if you never, this will never happen. You will never have a client say, how much do you charge? And you say 50, and they go, I'm going to pay you 100. That will never, ever, ever, ever happen. So I want everybody here to at least connect on this thought that you've got to take some ownership of your profession, and you can't look at the field around you as a gauge because the field around you is stuck in mediocrity. So if you're going to be better, you've got to connect with the people in this group. You've got to elevate. You've got to rise up. Sound good?
Amen.
Darby, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, now we also did a little exercise where I asked you guys to tell me what you believe you're worth and what you would charge the next person who showed up that was a potential client. And I think it's time to just start asking for what you're worth, period. Now, I said there's a prerequisite. You've got to be able to make the promise, and you've got to be able to deliver on that promise. So if you're not there right now, that's on you. You've got to up your skill set. You've got to get better. I'm not saying ask for more than you deserve. I'm saying ask for whatever your true value is. And I can't tell you that. But in most cases, it's more than you've been asking for. Any thoughts, comments, questions on that, or can we move past it?
Phil, this is Gary.
Hello, Gary.
When you say, how are you today? When you say
better.
Promise, are you referring to a guarantee?
You know, I used to use that word a long time ago because no other trainers were willing to do it. So I used to give an unconditional money-back guarantee. It just became a non-issue. So I'm not calling it a guarantee where you sit down and you go, okay, if I don't do this, you get your money back. That's not what I mean. But I mean, you're going to deliver an outcome, not simply a service. If you want to deliver a service, you could go work for LA Fitness and you'll fit right in. You know, if you want to say, I'll teach you the machines, I'll make sure your form is correct, I'll take you through workouts, that's fine. But if you really want to reach a level of excellence, then you've got to deliver an outcome. So I'll take you through workouts is weak. I'll show you how to lose weight is a little stronger. You will lose the weight you want to lose if you train with me. That's a promise. Now, it doesn't have to come down to a dialogue where they go, well, what if I don't? You don't have to have that discussion. And that's why when I talk about first you need competence, then you need confidence, you sort of ooze it. When you know you can deliver this, then it doesn't have to be, I'll back it up with a guarantee. It's just what you do, Gary. It's just what you do. And I remember on our first or second call, we spoke about a couple of your clients who had disease and don't anymore, who are very overweight, who aren't anymore. I mean, you're delivering it, so why not make the promise? Just get out of that space where it's tentative. Get out of that space where you go, well, I can't control what they eat. Well, I can't control what they do. You don't have to. You've just got to be a really strong coach. You've got to have the technology of change, and you have to deliver it in a way that they understand it. We're going to learn later on how we can really master getting them to comply, getting them to adhere at a much greater level than you guys ever learned before. But for now, it's a question of can you deliver it? And Gary, I know you can. I mean, we've spoken about it. There's no question. So it never has to even come down to that guarantee.
I agree.
Good?
I feel 100% confident about that. That's not even my issue. My issue is has always been the marketing issue. And that's what I'm struggling, believe it or not, I'm still struggling with that. But I have changed my mindset on it. I'm saying hi to a lot more people. So,
saying hi is a start. Saying hi is a start. Finding opportunities to meet people is next.
Yep, that's that. Because I know that's going to open up the whole program to me. So, but that's been my stumbling block at this point.
Well, eliminate that stumbling block. Today we're going to talk about a concept called creative tension. And again, we're only, six calls or seven calls into 64. So, you know, don't expect that everything is all of a sudden miraculously going to change, but I want you to start to see the light. I want you to start to see that this is possible. So, Gary, if you're saying hi to people, great. Now the next step is you've got to say, hi, my name's Gary Woodchurch. And if they tell you, say, what do you do? Just turn it into a dialogue. Just have conversations. Because as soon as it comes up, that you're in the fitness business in any way, shape, or form, most people are going to give you a little bit of bait. They're going to say something. They're going to go, oh, can you help me lose this? Or, oh, I don't want to see you. And you go, why? And they go, I've been eating terribly. And now you're at least in a conversation. And I'm telling you this because I live it. I'm not making this up. I'm not just pulling this out of left field. So when I see all of these people looking for these marketing tricks and these marketing things that they're going to learn to do online and running ads and sending 5 emails in 5 days. Just talk to people. Where? Everywhere and anywhere. But then it's up to you to find the discipline to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So if you say that's your stumbling block, then stop stumbling. Just start to go. Just start to put one foot in front of the other and just make it a point. Say, I'm going to meet two people tomorrow that I haven't met before. Where? I don't know. What if you stand in front of a movie theater? I'm serious. It doesn't matter where. You know, here in Florida, you don't see people walking in the streets. So where are they? That's what I ask. Where are they? Well, they're in the malls. Not only the indoor malls, they're in the strip shopping centers. There are places. There's the Delray Marketplace. Where people are just strolling around. They stop in a restaurant to eat. All these little outdoor cafes. It is just so easy to talk to people. Hey, what kind of dog is that? Did you guys just come out of the movie theater? What did you see? I mean, it's easy, Gary. It's just when you tell yourself it's a stumbling block, it feels difficult. And if anybody here is going, well, it's easy for Phil. No, it wasn't always easy for Phil. It's just I started to realize the value. I started to realize the return. I started to realize this really works, and it's fun. And I meet a lot of people who I never met before. And in 1969, I was 9 years old. I've just changed the subject. 1969, I was 9 years old, and I grew up in New York. And 1969 was a great, great time to be a kid in New York because the Mets won the World Series. And to this day, I could tell you the whole starting lineup of the 1969 Miracle Mets. The New York Knicks beat the Lakers for the NBA championship. I went to the games in Madison Square Garden with my father.
Wow.
But the biggie was Joe Namath won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Now, notice I said the Knicks and I said the Mets. But when it came to football, I said Joe Namath. I didn't say the Jets. Now, sure, they got recognition for being the winners, but I witnessed what happened. I saw it. Joe Namath came from Alabama, had a bad knee. Nobody thought much of him until he started playing. And then they said, this kid is something. But it wasn't only that. He became like the first sports celebrity. You know, it wasn't like it is today. There wasn't trash talking like there is today. But Joe Namath became a celebrity. And everywhere he went, there was the media. And on the back page of the Daily News and New York Post, they'd always try to get a picture of Joe Namath. And back then, this was Super Bowl III. There was the NFC and the AFC. And the NFC was far better. The AFC didn't stand a chance. And the Jets managed to win the AFC championship, and now they were going to play the Colts. There's no way they were going to win. It wasn't. You couldn't even fathom beating the Colts. Don Shula actually was the coach of the Colts back then. And days before the game, Joe Namath was in a restaurant. And reporters were heckling him. And he stood up, he was walking to the door, and he said, hey, guys. And everybody got silent. And he goes, listen to me. I guarantee a win. And it became every New York headline. Punk kid guarantees a win. Jock from Alabama with a bum knee is going to beat the Colts. Ha ha. There was no way it was going to happen. But you know what happened? The Jets won Super Bowl III. Now, the Colts were 13-1. Nobody's going to beat the Colts. And when I say that Joe Namath won that game, I'm obsessed. And I'll tell you this. There's something wrong with me because something happened in my head that year that I will watch on, like, ESPN Classics. I'll watch that game again and again and again and again and again. I've seen it 100 times plus because you see that Joe Namath is calling audibles on the line of scrimmage. He's reading the defense and changing the plays. Now, why am I telling you this? Because he did something that I never forgot. He made a public statement. In other words, he wouldn't have lost respect if they lost. Nobody expected them to win. But he became the darling of New York. He became the hero of every kid in New York at that time. Because he made the statement. Now, if he didn't make the statement, I guarantee a win. Would they have won? I don't know. But did it change something? I believe so. confidence, need, desire, hunger, a sense of team. I don't know. But there's something about the public statement that is very bold. So we're going to now start to learn about this very important and very powerful concept of creative tension. Creative tension is the gap between where you are and where you want to be. Now, when we first started this program not too long ago, I asked, what do you want? And very few of you could tell me. And so I want you to dream. I want you to imagine. I want you to think of your ideal, and very few of you could tell me. And that's what happens every time that I go through this with a new group. But now we're at a point that you guys are starting to create visions. So, Kathy, how does it feel when you read back your vision?
Oh, I can't wait to get started on it.
What emotions does it bring in you?
Excitement, purpose.
Those are pretty powerful emotions, right?
Yes.
Gary, I remember you posting somewhere. You didn't say anything about stumbling blocks. You created a future memory, correct?
Yes, I did.
How did it feel when you read that back?
It felt pretty good, actually. It gave me a feeling of security. A feeling of appreciation for what I do, and just made me feel productive as opposed to the struggle.
No, don't give me as opposed to. No, don't give me as opposed to right now. I just want to stay with what gave you, Darby.
I take that back,
Darby. You created something that I'm talking to Darby.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Darby. You created something that to me felt extremely pleasing. But how did it feel to you?
Very good.
What emotions?
Freeing.
Okay. What else?
Powerful.
Good. Put yourself there right now. What else?
Relaxed.
Good.
Peace. Calm.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about your family?
More happy. I don't know. That's not a very good description. More
happy work.
More at ease.
Okay.
Less stressful.
All right. Now, if I'm standing with Darby and I put my finger in her right ear, how long is she just going to stand there letting me do that?
Not very long.
Not very long. But let's suppose that you're just a little confused and you don't know why I'm doing this and you stand there. So then I say, okay, I'm going to take my other hand. I'm going to start to pull her hair. You would move away pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, you're getting on my nerves a little bit.
Yeah, right. So when we feel pain, when we feel discomfort, when we feel something that makes us discontent, our instinct is to move away from it. But if I had Darby in a position where she couldn't move away, then she would suffer it. She would have no choice but to suffer it. So this is what happens in our lives and our careers, is we get to a place where we have discontent. We have financial stress. We have emotional stress. We can't do the things we really want to do. But we make peace with it because we go, this is just my station in life right now, and at least I help people. Mm-hmm. And it's not really that much pain. It's just a finger in my ear. It's not like anybody's really hurting me. It's just a little pull of my hair.
That's a good way to put it.
But what if you could move away? Then why wouldn't you? I'm going to tell you why. Because you never created the wiring that gave you somewhere to move to. So creative tension is that desire to move away. So during this week, I'm going to send you guys one sheet. I'm going to tell you right now what's on the sheet. A circle is in the lower left, and a rectangle is in the upper right. The circle will represent where you are now. In that circle, there has to be some discontent. It's not extreme suffering. Nobody here is living a bad life. And very often, we sort of bury the discontent, but I'm asking you to do the opposite. I'm just asking you to acknowledge it. What is the annoyance? What is it that you'd like to move away from, but you just didn't realize you can? And that is the circle. The rectangle is the future memory, is what you're starting to create. So now when you attach emotion to it, when you're standing in that circle figuratively, you feel stressed, you feel discontent, you feel annoyed, you feel irritated. And now you suddenly realize there's somewhere you can move to. You can move to the rectangle. So if we can attach those two with a bungee cord, there's elasticity in that bungee cord. Now, if we move this rectangle farther away, what happens to the bungee cord? It has greater tension in it, right? Now, if we perceive this as emotional tension, in other words, if we're looking at that rectangle and going, my life sucks because I'm not there. No matter what I do, I'll never be there. I'll never make that kind of money. I'll never have that kind of security. I never did. My parents never did. As long as we're stuck in that, the bungee cord breaks. It snaps. It is emotional tension, and it snaps the cord. We're going to do the opposite. If you create the right tension in that cord, what we call creative tension, creative meaning you're going to figure out how to get there. You're going to create that. And the tension is very simply the period of time it's going to take to get there. So now the bungee cord is momentum. It literally propels you toward that outcome. But there's something very important in order for this to work the way I know it can, is you've got to really be in the emotion. Your brain has to perceive it as if it's real. So when you create this future memory at first, you can read it and you can say, this feels great and exciting and I feel safe and I feel secure and I feel freedom and I feel victorious. But then you turn around and you look at your electric bill and you go, I feel shitty. So it doesn't stick. So your brain erases that. It doesn't believe it to be a possibility. It's almost as if you read a fairy tale. But here's one of the beautiful things about your brain. If you learn how to work within its limits, it can serve you in ways you never imagined. And one of its limits is when you create an imagination, but you attach sense to it. I don't mean sense like it makes sense. I mean sight and sound and touch. And then you create emotion. Your brain does an amazing thing. It believes it to be real, and it stores it as if it stored a memory. Now, here's the great thing about a memory. Everybody right now, I want you to think about a great moment you had in your life as a child. Just go there right now. And if you're not driving, close your eyes and actually picture it as if you're watching it on TV. And when I count to three, I want you to step into the picture so you're actually experiencing it. One, two, three. See what you saw, feel what you felt, hear what you heard, know what you knew. What emotions are you feeling? Don't answer me out loud. Just consider them. What emotions are you feeling? And whichever emotion is most prominent, I want you to turn it up, crank it up, make it stronger. See, you have this ability with memories. You can access that memory. So you're going to simply do this by creating a memory that hasn't happened yet. And you can open your eyes and stop. So now that you're starting to create it, I'm going to give you one more week to really create this future memory. And I'm going to give you an exercise that some of you will reject because it seems so simple, it seems absurd, it seems kind of ridiculous. But I will tell you, I have done this with executives. I have done this with doctors. I have done this with millionaires. It completely changes their potential. But in order for you to do this, you must create the future memory. So what I'm going to ask right now is somebody here to be Joe Namath. I want somebody here to be bold enough to make the public statement. I want somebody here to state the future memory, even if it's not fully refined, as if it's real. Now, I know it raises up fear right now because you haven't locked it in as a future memory yet. If I asked you to tell me about the memory of when you were a child, you could do that. But I want you to trust that you're going to make this vision, every bit as solid. And one of the things you have to avoid is asking how. So if a part of this is you are completely free of debt living in a beautiful home on the ocean, and you ask, how will I get there? The negative talk monster will give you all the reasons why you can't. So don't ask how. Just create the pure memory. Because remember what I said. Poor Darby standing there with my finger in her ear if she doesn't have another place to go. Mm-hmm. So you've got to create that other place to go. And then you figure out how to get there. And it happens. And I'm promising you it happens. This is not my first rodeo here in Be Better. And as you look around the industry, lots of the people who you know and who you respect and who you think highly of have gone through this program. So I haven't steered you wrong yet. I want you to trust me. Now, who is willing to stake the future memory, to make the public statement among the group? Who's courageous enough? Who said I am?
I will. Yes, Kathy, I'm going to, okay. This is going to happen. It's already started. My vision is already started.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to have at least two of the six centers that I want in about 8 months. I already have two gals that I recruited that are renting my facility and we're sharing classes. I'm going to have my professional chef certification in August, and I'll be in Washington, D.C. getting my franchise for the PCRM certification to teach in all the places that I want to. Now, I don't know about the money yet. I haven't figured that out.
Don't worry about the money. Just tell me more about the vision. Tell me what's going to be different in your life. Tell me what you're going to be living. Pick a day. Pick a moment. Tell me what life is like.
Okay. Life is that I have my chauffeur driving me around to wherever I want to go so I can work on my projects. And I'm traveling throughout the country, and I'm working with physicians in Kaiser. I'm working with Weight Watchers, and I'm still healthy. And by the way, you guys, I'm 67 years old, or 67 years young. So it's never too late to start. And you have to think bigger sometimes. So I plan.
Yeah, but stay in it, Kathy. Don't start giving them advice.
Okay.
I want you to be in this.
So my franchise is based on Plant Strong, whole food, plant based, and it's basically for weight loss, reversing diabetes, working with people that have cancer that want to reverse cancer. And especially men, I decided that I'm going to start working with men because prostate cancer is something that's preventable. And if you do have it, you can stop it dead in its tracks.
Kathy, will people be hugging you often?
Yes, and I'll be hugging them often.
I want you to tell me a reason why somebody will be hugging you.
Because they thought they didn't have any other way to do this. And here I'm giving them opportunity to change their life by just changing their diet and exercising and getting more social, being able to do things they didn't think possible.
Okay. Can you be you're not driving right now, are you?
No.
Is it safe for you to close your eyes where you are?
Okay.
Okay. Close your eyes. I want you to be silent for about 30 seconds, and I want you to be in that hug. Okay? It doesn't matter who's hugging you. I want you to literally feel that hug, and I want you to feel the emotion that is coming from that person to you. I want you to feel the actual gratitude. And now I want you to tell me what emotion is prominent in you. What emotion are you feeling?
Choked up.
Okay, choked up, why?
Because
you feel what?
I feel so good for the person that I helped.
Okay.
I didn't realize I had that power.
What power? To help that person at that level?
To have influenced people that way.
And now you know it to be absolutely true?
Yes.
Okay. When you come home, what do you see when you open your door?
My cats.
Okay. How do they make you feel?
Oh, my gosh. They make me feel so good.
Where is your favorite place in the house to be relaxed?
Outside on my patio.
Okay. So in your mind, sit outside on your patio.
Mm-hmm.
Know that your cats are there. And now reflect on that hug because it happened that day. Reflect on that hug because it's a memory. And how is this making you feel?
Makes me feel I want to do more.
You feel a sense of accomplishment?
I feel a great sense of accomplishment. That's why I want to do more for more people.
Tell me about the gratitude you feel.
I have gratitude that I have the skills and the ability to make this happen for them.
Okay, so now sitting on your patio, keep your eyes closed, but sitting on your patio, your eyes are open in your vision, okay? You're looking around.
Okay.
And I want you to just notice, don't say anything, I want you to notice what you see. I want you to notice what you hear, whether it's a gentle breeze or the sound of nature. Just notice what you hear, what you see, and how you feel. And right now you've created an emotional state that feels good, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Awesome.
So here's what you know, Kathy. You are capable of creating that emotional state. There's no question because you just did it, right?
Right.
If you did it today, can you do it tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I want you to come out of that state right now. Just come right back to this call.
Oh, okay.
And in an instant, go back there. You ready to go? Do it now. Just go back. Tell me when you're there.
On the patio with my cats, feeling that,
uh-huh.
Having that feeling?
Yep.
Okay, I'm there.
Okay. So now you're starting to create the future memory. It's locking in where you can access it. Do you get that?
Oh, got it.
Is everybody understanding what we're doing? We're creating something, a moment in time that your brain can recall. It's calling it again as if it happened already. Now, why is this so important? Because this puts the creative in the tension line. This makes it a positive. This doesn't put you in a place where you go, well, my stumbling blocks are. This is where you're truly excited because you know where you're going. And the beauty of this is your brain doesn't question it because it's storing it as a memory. So we are calling it a future memory. So when I send you that creative tension form later in the week, you're going to fill it out. You're going to start to write in the circle the things that you're discontent with now, and then you're going to fill in the rectangle with whatever the future will be, whatever the future memory is. And this is the exercise that you're going to start doing this week, and I'm telling you it's going to feel weird. But as you become more comfortable with it and master it, just watch how things change. And you'll be talking about it on the call. And those of you who don't do it, I'm telling you, you're going to reach a point where you're going to go, I should have done it. Because everybody else is going to be having experiences, very positive experiences. Not supernatural experiences. It's just a shift in belief. So what you do is once you've locked in that future memory, once you've created it, you stand in your present. You stand. Physically stand in your circle and you think about the discontent that you have now and you feel it. Now, I'm going to warn you, sometimes you get a little tear come down your face. Sometimes you do get really sad. I'm not sending you to a place of being sad. This is your present. This is where you are. And again, it's not a horrible place, But if you're going to think about the things that you are unhappy with, let that emotion happen. Because it's the finger in the ear and the pulling of the hair. You're going to feel so uncomfortable that you're going to want to get out of it. So you stand in a circle, you feel it, and once it feels intense, you literally step. You take a step out of the circle, and you step along the creative tension line. Now, this is all in your imagination, but you physically step, and you step into that future memory, and you stand there. This entire experience can take you 3 to 5 minutes. You do it at least once a day. So I know how crazy it sounds, but I have two questions. One, do you understand what I'm asking you to do?
Yes.
Is there anybody who doesn't?
Mm-mm.
Okay. The second question is a harder one. Are you willing to do it for an entire week?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there anybody who isn't? Kathy, thank you for being Joe Namath. You made the public statement. You said it's already happening. We know it's going to happen. And all I can say is 2018, party in your backyard, on your patio.
Absolutely.
All right, be better party on the patio. I just want to tell you I'm allergic to cats, so I'm going to have to stay outside, okay?
Okay.
All right, so it's 2 o'clock for anybody who has a client, and you will receive a follow-up email with a form, with an attachment, and you'll start to really work on this. But this is something you can begin now. Don't start with a million questions. Don't try to analyze it. Just do it. You're just going to create that future memory and then go through the experience every day of standing in your discontent. And when you're feeling it, you take a step into your future memory and just let those emotions come over you. Because your brain is wired to drive you away from the discontent and toward the positive emotions. This is my promise. So when I talk about a promise, you do this exercise, life is going to change for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now knowing the 2 o'clock clients are taken care of, I'll stay on the line if anybody has any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be specific to what we spoke about today. It could be specific to anything we've spoken about thus far. What I'd like is that you guys are starting to really feel a comfort level with charging what you feel is in line with your value, that you're willing to ask for that number, and that you're starting to go beyond the thought of, I don't know how to meet people, and you're starting to just create conversations that wouldn't have existed otherwise. Any thoughts, comments, questions at all?
I just have a comment.
Okay.
So... I've been saying my rates now are $75 and I don't hesitate, and I haven't had anybody say they can't afford it. And that was,
right,
that blew me away. And I have been charging $50, but I gave myself a $4 raise, by the way.
Good.
So it's all working, though.
Yes. And Kathy, you know what? The reason people couldn't afford it before, do you know why?
Because I didn't ask for it.
Yeah, because you decided they couldn't afford it.
That's right. That's
so that became your reality.
And when they said, well, I don't know, I'm on disability, blah, 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 and I said, well, then you'll have to find someone else. And then an hour later, they call me. I want to get started.
Isn't that amazing?
75. It is amazing.
And yeah. Here's something else that I want you guys to take note of, and you'll learn this more as we go. But everything that you're learning becomes a power that you have to influence other people. So when you start to realize that we move because of motion, right? Movement is motion. So what prompts us to move is emotion. Then you'll stop talking to people about it's 3 sessions a week, it's $45, because that's linear, that's rational brain. If you want to get people to say yes, you get them in emotion. You get them to see the outcome. You help them create the future memory. And I don't care what number you throw at them, they're going to say yes, assuming you're willing to make a confident promise and deliver on it. So that's great news, Kathy.
Yep.
Anyone else? Any thoughts, comments, questions on anything? Did I cut you off? Are you going to say something else?
Yeah. Hey, Phil, no. I have a question. I guess it's a comment. Since we're talking about affordability, let's just say that you have a school teacher single mom school teacher. We know that school teachers make a boatload of money. And, you know, and then they say the whole I can't afford you thing. I mean, you just send them to the somewhere where you know they won't get the result. I mean, how do you, you know, sometimes I've fallen to that in the past of just being empathetic. Well, yeah, I understand, you know, so blah, blah, blah. And I know moving forward as we get better, we shouldn't play that game. But, you know, what if there are people that are truly low-income earners that need your service? How do you, you know, $125 an hour, they're like, well, or $100 an hour, whatever. It's like, well, they may be only making $1,400, $1,500 a month or so. I mean, that's food off the table for them. How do you?
I can tell you what
I'll let you in a minute. Who was that? Who just said I can tell you what I did?
Danny.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I just developed small group training for the certain hours that, like, my teachers were able to do it, and I put them on a year contract auto draft, and then charged less, but I put four in one session. And that's what I did to eliminate on that hour.
Okay,
good. Let me just give you a different thought process, though, rather than the specific of what to do, okay? Because every suggestion of what to do will be a good one. But let me give you a different thought process.
Okay.
You are an altruist. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you really do care about people, right? This is not an act. You really do care about people.
Mm-hmm.
So in you is this desire to help everyone who needs help, correct?
Correct.
And I would say within a 5-mile radius, there are well over 5,000 people who need help, correct?
Correct.
Can you train 5,000 people one-on-one?
No.
No way, right?
No.
So a part of you being the best that you could be is preserving the integrity of what you deliver and the value you deliver. Now, let's just think down the road. Let's say that you establish yourself and you have a tremendous reputation and everybody knows that people pay you a premium because you're the best, right?
Yeah.
And now you're interviewed on television. And then you're interviewed on the radio. And then you do seminars. And then you write a book. How are you better equipped to help the world? Preserving the integrity of what you do or trying to get 5,000 people to afford you?
Make info products.
There are so many things you could do down the road. But the first thing you have to do is preserve the value, the integrity of what you deliver. So as soon as you drop because you feel somebody can't afford you, you have set a different precedent. You have dropped to mediocrity. And I would love to go to the Lamborghini dealership and go, you know, I really want this car. I just don't make that kind of money. And they go, well, my heart goes out to you, buddy. You could have it, right? They're going to go, you know what? There's a Lexus dealership down the road. You're probably better off there.
Yeah.
So I'm just – this becomes a challenge for you to preserve your own worth. And your altruistic heart initially is a weakness. But it becomes a strength when you really get to the place where you're commanding that value and you're commanding that presence, you're commanding that integrity, because then you have the ability to reach people. But don't try to do it the other way. Don't try to meet everybody's demand right now because it'll take from you. And that's the weakness of being the altruist, is parasites will pull from you. And you've got to be protected from that. So if you're going to reasonably be able to train 12 people, then a part of the process is of those 5,000, there are going to be 4,988 that you can't train, right? So you have to be able to say, I'd love to give you advice. I'd love to give you direction. I will email you an article. In fact, you might even go to this trainer, but I can't train you for less than that. And I think at times you're going to be shocked how suddenly people can afford it. Listen to what Kathy just said. She was deciding that people couldn't afford more than $50. She was deciding that, so that was the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as she started asking for more, guess what? People found a way. maybe the school teacher has some money put away. Maybe her husband will pay for it. Maybe her parents will pay for it. Maybe there's a trust fund. You don't know. So I'm saying, don't feel like you have to constantly drop, because it means you don't believe in the value you're setting for yourself.
Gotcha.
Does that help?
Tremendously. And I like that, that term is preserving your value preservation.
Well, that's what it is. And I said it at the beginning. Because we care, we let people take advantage of us. And where is that written? Where is that part of being a personal trainer?
Right.
Good. Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything? It's a good time to bring up anything. Whoever's thinking maybe I should say it, but maybe I shouldn't, just go ahead and say it.
Hey, Phil. This is Todd out of New York.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, just had a from just a different angle. Say you still have that client, the prospect, and let's say you give them the price, but they're in their minds, they're already calculating and comparing. Well, the industry is this amount, they're asking this amount, and they say no, they can't afford it. But the reality is, when we talk value, I can have the value, and I say this is what it is. Their perceived value is based on the comparison of what other trainers are charging, what other programs are out there. How do you respond to someone that possibly is trying to they are undercutting your value because they're not necessarily, they're comparing you up against someone else or their past experience?
Todd, I'm never letting them get there, and I'm going to tell you why. Plato, the philosopher Plato, said that the human mind is like a chariot drawn by two horses. One is a very small, not so strong, very smart horse. This small, not so strong, but very smart horse knows that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Okay? So that's one horse pulling the chariot. That is the horse named rational thought. There's another horse, and this horse is a big, dumb, playful horse. Strong, happy. This is the horse of emotion. So Plato says, when you are in your linear mind, you're communicating with rational thought. So you say, okay, rational thought, you're going to go to point A, then point B, then point C, then point D. That's where we're going to go. And rational thought says, okay, got it. And rational thought starts to go there. But emotion, he's just happy initially to just follow rational thought until another horse goes by, a pretty horse, and he goes whoop and pulls the whole chariot and it goes in a completely different direction. Because emotion doesn't know how to think linear. So when you get into that linear thought process, that's when they do comparisons. That's when they start to think that way. You've got to communicate purely in emotion. We're not talking about you, the trainer, and what you charge. We're talking about them, the client, and what they will achieve. We're talking about the outcome. Just as Kathy created that future memory, that's how you're communicating with somebody. What is life going to be like when you're 25 pounds lighter? What is life going to be like when you get out of these habits that you have now that say make you feel horrible? What is life going to be like when you wake up at 5:30 in the morning with energy? What is life going to be like? Suddenly, they're not thinking about a comparison of you and other trainers. They're thinking about the outcome and what is that worth to them. This may be hard to believe if you're used to communicating in rational thought, as most trainers do. They give people the reasons they should exercise. They give people the facts. I'm going to see you 3 times a week. We're going to do cardio from this to this. They're giving them linear thinking. People never make decisions in linear thought. The decision is always made in emotion. So, Todd, have you ever in your life made a stupid decision?
Definitely.
And when you think back on the stupidest decision you ever made, can you acknowledge that it was really dumb?
Yeah.
But in the moment, it felt like the right thing to do, and that's why you did it. In the moment, it felt like the right thing to do. So what I'm telling you is people make the decision to train with you because it feels like the right thing to do. So the fact is you are not other trainers. You are not a representative of an industry based in mediocrity. Why would they compare you to them? You're not them. You're somebody who's going to deliver an outcome that this person wants. And I hope all of you recognize when I told you, I said, we're going to start talking about mindset because some of you have asked me, when are we going to learn about the metabolic reboot? When are we going to learn about the science? When are we going to learn about how to reverse disease? I said, it starts with mindset, and here's why. Because all of the things that I'm still hearing from you guys indicate that you're not there yet, and that's okay. But you're going to see the little shifts happen with you, and I think Kathy was an elegant example of it today. She said, I made a change in my mind. I started asking differently, and look what's happened. So what I'm telling you is if you're anticipating that conversation, it'll happen because you're expecting it and you're communicating in that mode. I would never get into that mode when I'm trying to influence somebody. Does that help?
No, that helps greatly.
Good. And Todd, it's a process. Don't expect that you hang up the call and suddenly, you know, boom, I got this. But a little at a time, just like developing a muscle, you're going to start to develop a language, a mindset, a different outlook, a different perspective, and suddenly things are going to happen differently. And that's why this program is so effective, because we start from the mindset outward. Make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Hey, Phil, David, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I guess my thing, I see where Todd is coming from. Let's just say that, you know, we have been articulating from the emotional point of view, and when you say, okay, well, this is what it is or whatever, when you get to the numbers, then their reaction may be, well, wow, you know, well, place down the street is only this much and this place charges that and you're way over that or whatever. So if they take it linear, how do you pull them back to?
Listen, there are times that it's not for them right now. There are times that you're going to say, listen, know this. You're not those people.
Okay, of course, yeah.
Let's just say that there's a personal trainer who charges people $10 an hour.
Yeah.
Let's say there are two. Okay, one of them is 50 years old and just a strange guy, okay? Everybody knows he's strange, but he's only $10 an hour. And the other is a 15-year-old kid who started just charging people for personal training, right?
Yeah.
And you say, well, I'm asking 125, and they go, oh, no, I can go to this guy or that guy, and they're going to charge me $10. What would you say?
Well, the Lord, they're not me. I mean.
Well, isn't it the same thing? When you separate yourself from the mediocrity of this industry, isn't it the same thing? I mean, you have to believe this, because all the questions that you're anticipating will go away when you stop anticipating them. All of the what-ifs, you know, what if people say this and what if people say that? The more you're expecting it, the more you create it.
I understand.
But you just have to know you're not the average trainer.
Right.
You know, and really there are questions like simple questions, then why are you talking to me? And that may sound rude, but if somebody goes to me, well, I can go get bargain training down the street at the gym. I go, then why are you talking to me? Well, because you're going to bring me the result. Okay. So let's get you started. Right? I mean, why are you in this dialogue with me? You knew you could go down the street. So it comes from a place of belief. Just know that you're not selling the commodity of an exercise session. You're selling an emotional and then a very real, tangible outcome.
Bingo. Yep.
Good. I feel that got through.
Yep. Yeah, perfect. Okay.
All right, is there one more? One more before we wrap it up. Thought, comment, question about anything at all. Come on, you who rarely speak, now's the time. By the way, I just want you guys to know, I do look and I know who's on every call. So I do know that there are at least 15 people who just have not spoken yet on the calls. And what I want to say to you is you're welcome to hang out in the back, but I promise you it's a lot better in terms of outcome if you jump in. So going once, going twice. All right. All right, so until we speak again, which will be a week from today, expect that in a couple of days I'm going to send you a little simple sheet with a circle and a rectangle. In the meantime, I want you to do this exercise, and I want you to post your outcomes with it. Some of you will go, it's really hard for me to imagine. It's really hard for me to think with emotion. I can't really get clear on it. Others are going to go, it's amazing. I love it. I'm almost becoming addicted to it. Whatever you're experiencing, I'd like you to post that. So until we speak again next week, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Will.